buddy. Welcome to the show. Gideon, how's it going this week, man?
Going good, dude. Just been hanging out, playing Marvel Rivals, playing some Fortnite. I think I finished the
Nice.
fourth issue of All-Star Superman, so maybe I'm like a third of the way through, I
Yeah, what
think.
was the last thing that you read about?
Spoilers if anybody cares, but he took Lois on that like special date, I would
Yeah.
say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good chapter. Really
Yeah.
iconic.
That was really cool.
Yeah, when they kiss on the moon at the end, that's some good
Oh yeah,
stuff.
dude.
Okay, cool. Okay, your Marvel Rivals and Fortnite, that's good.
And Doom Eternal, I should say. I
And Doom
started the
Eternal.
DLC.
Yeah, just getting prepared for the Dark Ages, Doom the Dark Age. Okay, awesome. Yeah, it comes out in May. We learned today. So very happy about that. And I also downloaded the a bought and downloaded Ninja Gaiden Black 2. So I'm
Nice.
gonna hop into that as soon as we're done.
Is that co-developed by Platinum? Is it Platinum and Team Ninja?
No. So
Okay.
the new Ninja Gaiden 4 that is not out yet is co-developed by Team Ninja and Platinum Games. Ninja Gaiden Black is just a re or 2 is a remake of Ninja Gaiden 2,
Okay.
which
I got
came
gotcha.
out in like 2008 for it was a 360 exclusive actually when it came out, which was
Wow.
kind of interesting for like a character action game. And then it came out on PS3 and they took all the dismemberment out of it, which I thought was
What?
like really kind of shitty. And I remember like being totally bummed out by that. So you take it away with though. And of course, Neil, welcome to the podcast, man. How's it going this week?
Well, getting over a little bit of a cold, so that's been fun, and that's why we're kind of delayed here, so I apologize for having to
No,
meet you guys.
you sound good.
Yeah, no worries, dude.
Your
But
dulcet tones.
yeah, but yeah, just struggling through work and finally saw the movie last night.
Nice.
It was something.
In the theater by yourself?
No, oh, my, dude, like four more people showed up like 5 minutes into the movie.
Ugh.
I was like, what are you doing?
They missed the
I hate
opening.
it. Dude,
Yeah.
Yeah. At Alamo Drafthouse, they will not let you in if you're late.
that's awesome.
Interesting. I didn't find that out the hard way because I was like there right on time, but they were like, hey, just so you know, don't be late. Like, show up early because we cannot let you in if you're past the start of the movie.
That's so awesome, dude.
Yeah. They're really hardcore about that.
I can't wait to go to one. It's gonna be
Dude,
so awesome.
to come up to anytime you want to come up to Minnesota, spend a weekend. We'll go to like all the cool Minneapolis like places to eat or wherever you want to go. We'll get whatever kind of food you want to get that you can't get in Muscatine, and then we'll go see something at Alamo Drafthouse.
Hell yeah. Perfect day
It
right
would.
there.
I know Seven Samurai's coming, so we could do
Oof.
that. But we could. There's this extremely expensive sushi place downtown, and then go see Seven Samurai. Now that would be
That'd be awesome.
that's a day. That's a
Then we
day
can
right
like
there.
fight each other to the death with swords, like real
Yeah,
swords.
hopefully it's snowing out and we can get blood all over the snow and bleed out.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And Neil, how's your white main World of Warcraft character going?
I'm sorry, is the white main one the one for a group or is
Upbeat?
that
That's the troll, yeah.
Oh yeah. I think I'm almost through Wrath of the Lich King content that's available for me.
Have you been to Grizzly Hills?
Yeah, just finished up there.
Yeah, and the music is dope, isn't it?
Damn,
Yeah.
nice, dude.
Yeah, it's really good. All right, cool. Well, you're making pretty damn good progress, especially because there's no cataclysm. Like, there's very little cataclysm endgame content. Like, that expansion was mostly like them
The
fixing the game
world.
for new players. Yeah, so there's like 5 levels instead of 10 levels of content for Cata, and that's kind of it. So yeah, cool. Well, glad that you continue to enjoy, question mark. That's good. Maybe we'll play a little bit here. Gid and I are in Red Ridge just doing some questing. So today we are here to talk about kind of Nosferatu and Dracula in general, I suppose. Gideon is going to give us a little bit of history about the old 1920s movie. This is and then we're going to talk about the new Robert Eggers Nosferatu. Fun fact that I was sharing with Gideon last night, somebody pointed this out. Jimmy Carter was actually technically alive for all three Nosferatu releases. He was alive when the one in the 20s came out. Like, he was an infant, but he was alive. He was there for the 1979 one. He was president for the 1979 one. And then he was just barely alive when the Robert Eggers Nosferatu came out 100 years later, so he made it. So
That's awesome.
maybe the only way I can relate to this is like maybe I'll get one more theatrical Blade Runner film before I'm ready to punch my ticket, you know? I'll be like 108, and I'll be like, they'll wheel me in, and I'll time to die. You know, I'll just expire like
My
that. So,
tears in the rain.
yeah, exactly, dude. You have to drop grandpa off at the Kinoplex before you take him
Oh my
to the
God.
funeral home.
Dude, I would love to go out that way. Like, I don't know, I'm watching like Mad Max Furiosa or something, just like volume cranked to the max because I can't hear
Yeah.
anything anymore. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
You know, getting do you know the author Aldous Huxley?
Yes, Brave New World, right?
Yeah, he wrote Brave New World and a bunch of other shit, but he was also a prolific taker of LSD.
Oh, okay, nice.
And he died on his deathbed. He injected himself with a shitload of LSD and died like tripping into oblivion.
Jesus.
Yeah, no,
I
that's awesome.
don't know. I don't know if that would be like a good way to go. That sounds like it'd be really scary, but I don't know. I've never done that, so I don't know
No,
if
Aldous Huxley is a fuck. It has balls of steel. Let's just put it that way. Okay.
So
Anyway,
cool.
so again, you went and saw the 1920s Nosferatu in downtown Muscatine at Wesley, right?
Yeah, Wesley. So
Yeah,
it
tell me
was,
about that.
dude, it was so cool because I used to go to Wesley as a kid, so I hadn't been there in a while. And quick sidebar, I never had a GameCube, but they had a GameCube and had Double Dash. And like every night before youth group, they were just like, "Yeah, you can just play on the GameCube, no worries." So I literally was in this like room, and like the sun was like shining through like the cathedral like windows and shit, and I'm just playing Double Dash, and it's like perfect. It's like so heavenly. It's such a funny memory to me.
Yeah,
And
you found God in that
like
GameCube,
yeah, in that little room with the GameCube. It was awesome, dude. It was amazing.
You know,
I would like paint this memory, dude. It was amazing.
so I th this is not me saying that one, you know, denomination of Christianity is better than any of the others. That's not where I'm coming out from. This is just like one of those funny, like, growing up things. So, like, you know, you grow up in one church and you don't realize how things are in other churches, right? Because you never go, right? Like, you're just like, it's not like different restaurants where you try them out all the time, right? It's like your family does one thing and that's it. And so it was like one weekend I was over at Nick Daly's house and we were playing games or whatever. And they're like, oh, we got to go to church. I was like, oh, well, I know what going to church is like, right? Because I go to St. Matthias, right? Catholic church. And so we went to Calvary, which Neil doesn't know, but that's like the mega church in Muscatine, you know, mega church, but it's like inside of an old Shopko in Muscatine. And they're like, oh, no, you guys are kids. You go back to Kids Corner. And I was like, oh, I know what this is. We have this at Catholic Church where they just go and they basically do Sunday school for like a homily for the kids in the back room. It's like, I know all about this. No, get back there. Kids are playing Dance Dance Revolution and there's like buckets full of Legos and toys and they're having fun and shit. And I was like, what is this? Like, because my whole experience of church up to that point had been like sitting in a pew and like going to the same Catholic masses that my parents were going to with no thing for kids to go to. So you just sit there and you know, people do the Gregorian chant or do crazy shit in Latin or they do all this, you know. They do Catholic shit, right? And so that was a mind-blowing experience to me for sure as a kid. The first time I went to a church and they had video games, I was like, what the fuck is this? Anyway.
No, you're all good. But yeah, so I hadn't been there in a while, and man, I saw, so like on like it was like a community events of Muscatine or something like that page. They had it, and it was, free to go to, and it was just at the church, and they had three different projectors it was on, but one of the projectors, it was like reversed for the organist, so he could like see it in the mirror while he played along to it. And yeah, it was just awesome. I mean, they were super nice, and it was just a really, really dope atmosphere because we were just in the main room. And the organ, the guy that I should look it up, but the gentleman that played along to the movie, he like gave backstory on it and explained how like it wasn't just like a black and white movie. It was like the original, you know, during daytime scenes, it's like orange or like yellowish tint to the film,
right?
Like, bluish one for the, maybe purple, I can't fully remember, for the nighttime scenes. But he just gave a lot of backstory. It was really helpful for the original, and talking about like where it was filmed and how this movie was like almost lost to time because Bram Stoker's wife like didn't want it out because it's basically just a ripoff of Dracula and all this stuff. So it's incredible we even have the original, and it's so deservedly iconic, I feel like. And it's just a really awesome experience getting to see it for free in that environment, getting all the context, and then leading into this one, this new one, which, I mean, this Robert Eggers is probably one of my favorite top three working directors today. So
yeah,
very, very excited about it, about the whole thing.
Yeah, so would you say the old one, well, holds up is kind of a loaded term because obviously it's, you know, silent and there's cards for all the dialogue and everything, but you know, it was like an enjoyable movie outside of the organ church experience.
Yeah, outside of just like the actual experience and stuff, I feel like my enjoyment was definitely increased by getting that backstory and context. I feel like if you didn't really know and you just kind of popped it on, you probably wouldn't have the best of time. But it was still like a really fun monster movie. It was decently paced. I still thought some of the stuff with like the boat was actually pretty impressive, especially for the time. Like, because there's like shots where they're like on the ocean on the boat, and it's not, it doesn't look like it's destabilized or whatever. It's just really well done. And you see a lot of Nosferatu and a lot of Count Orlok and the gothic, like the origins of that, like gothic horror. It was just, it was really cool. So I do think it holds up, and I've only seen it that one time. But yeah, I think if people want to watch it, they should just like get some backstory on it, I guess, or context first.
Okay. And Neil, what was your background with Nosferatu before seeing the Robert Eggers movie?
Oh, I did kind of want to ask you guys. So I haven't seen the black and white, but not to jump the gun too much, but I first off, I wondered, have you guys read Dracula?
No,
not
I can't
yet.
Read. Next question.
Yeah, okay. I forgot Sam. Lore, of course not. but, so I'm going to move forward on the discussion just a little bit because this technically isn't a Dracula movie. Like, it.
Right.
But I was comparing it to the 92 Francis Ford Coppola adaptation of Dracula a lot.
Is that called Bram Stoker's Dracula, right?
No, it's the one with Keanu, right?
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
That one I haven't seen yet.
I would recommend seeing it. Like, I'm going to compare it a lot, frankly.
Okay.
Where it has definite problems, one of them being it's probably the worst Keanu Reeves acting role he's ever done. But
like, I am Keanu Dracula. Okay, sorry.
I mean, you're not too far off there. Also, Sam, like you'll enjoy this. It has Tom Waits in it.
Oh, now I'm interested, dude. We got to put this movie on the list. Maybe this next October.
Yeah, but like it's a very visually, like, Coppola did a, like he did a bunch of like weird artistic stuff, like something like it's just like it's a filmmaker's movie, I guess is the way to put it. Like he went out of his way to do things in like complex or like more difficult because he wanted to do them that way.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I think I've seen a video talking about it, and after watching the original Nosferatu, this one, and I did watch the original 1931 Dracula a couple months ago, but I was kind of sleepy. I feel like I should rewatch it. I'm super keen to watch like just anything vampire related, and especially like I would call that more of like a heavy hitter, like the actual, you know, Bram Stoker's Dracula or something like that.
I was unaware previously that this Nosferatu movie and the old I didn't know it was a remake, basically, is what I'm saying. Like, I didn't know that it was this whole thing about, like, he's a recently, I don't want to say graduated, but he's recently been confirmed to be okay to work at this, like, real estate agency. Is that what he's doing in the movie?
And in the original one, it's similar. He works for like a company,
right? Okay.
And yeah, he's like tasked to go,
right? And he gets like sent up to the count, and then
to do
events transpire, right? Okay. See, I just thought that that was a creation of the new movie. I was surprised when I went back and I read it, like, oh no, that's basically the plot of all the Dracula, right? That's the plot of the Bram Stoker novel.
That's actually Keanu's character.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
But even within the novel, yes, that's the premise.
Okay.
Have you guys, real quick, have you also seen I haven't seen this one yet, but the Nosferatu the Vampire from 1979?
No.
No.
Okay.
That's the Werner Herzog one, and I haven't seen it.
I think so, yeah. Okay.
The only other Nosferatu thing I'm familiar with is the episode of SpongeBob where he makes a brief cameo.
Dude, hell yeah.
Neil, are you familiar with that episode?
No, I kept seeing it be referenced, but SpongeBob was not really an aspect of my growing up. We didn't have TV channels. Like, you know, I would see an episode here or there when I was over at a friend's house or something, but...
Right. Okay.
No, not a cultural touchstone for me.
Okay, fair enough. That was the first time I ever saw it, and I was like, what the hell is
that
thing?
That's definitely how I was introduced, yeah.
So, Robert Eggers does The Witch, and then he does The Lighthouse and The Northmen, and then he does his first movie without the word "the" in the title, and it's called Nosferatu.
That's right.
So, essentially, a good summary of it would be it opens on Lily Depp's character being a lonely teenager and having like a psychosexual mental relationship with a spirit that she is unfamiliar of the nature of, right?
Like a dark presence, yeah.
Like a dark presence, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, flash forward many years later, she's married, soon to be married, fiance?
I think they just married.
They just married, okay.
Yeah, she like says really the honeymoon was too short.
Yeah, oh, that's right, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so they get married, and then he gets a job as a real estate person, dude, gets sent up to a castle. Mm-hmm. Lo and behold, Count Orlok lives in the castle, and he's scary as fuck, and decides, like, okay, now is my chance to get some land in this town where I've been obsessed with this girl for years and years and years, and I'm going to, like, go back there and, you know, take what's rightfully mine, and, you know, so events transpire from there. I will say, guys, I'm just going to move through the movie somewhat linearly. Mm-hmm. I was riveted by this movie from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And once we got into like the Transylvanian countryside and where we were encountering like the village full of the Romani people, immediately this just establishes itself as another kind of Dracula movie. And something that I think Robert Eggers, obviously, like, he always is so focused on like historical accuracy. Something that immediately stands out about this Dracula story is they make Eastern Europeans like Eastern Europeans, right? They draw like a really clear distinction between like the civilization of like West Germany and Eastern Czechoslovakia into Transylvania, almost like Ukraine, almost like this is almost becoming like what we think of as Eastern Europe, like Russia, right? Or like Kazakhstan or something like that, where there's like clearly this other kind of influence going on with like all the look of all the people. And like even Orlok himself
is
so different compared to what, I mean, everybody, when they think of Dracula, thinks of Bela Lugosi, right? And that almost, I don't want to say Italian, but like the slick back hair, the white skin, the clean shaven face. And Orlok in this movie is immediately like so Eastern European looking, and like with the mustache and that, like the big fuzzy hat and things like that. I don't know. Did that strike you guys? Like, I just really appreciated how immediately different this was. And I thought it was cool that, like, we'll get a little bit into this later, but I would be curious to read about the history of Dracula and how these stories came to be, and if it really was about like a fear of this other people that weren't, I don't want to say they weren't real white people. I'm like not trying to like make that distinction, but like this other, these weird European, Eastern European people on the other side of those mountains over there, like is that like where the fear of Dracula and Nosferatu and vampires really stems? Like where, like I would love to read all about that shit, but is that something that kind of stood out to you guys?
Well, for me, and you guys might be able to speak to this more, but I think maybe even with the original like book Dracula, maybe elements of him were kind of modeled after, I think, Vlad the Impaler and stuff. Yeah. Like that almost like, I mean, I don't know the full history and context of that person. I just know he was horrible and murdered a bunch of people. But so I wonder if like, you know, was the mustache kind of like drawing inspiration from that historical figure or just like that area of those people. I think I saw like maybe some reference photos of maybe like Hungarian stuff, but I'm not totally sure, but I did really appreciate it and his whole look, especially in the castle with the cloak and his hat and the, the mustache. I thought was shocking, and it's even more shocking at the end of the movie, I'd say. But
what do you mean? Yeah. What do you mean shocking? Like just because he's out in broad daylight?
No, I think it's just like he's almost like even more ancient and just menacing. And like, I mean, like when his mustache is like dripping blood and stuff, it's like really disgusting. Like he's just really terrifying on lots of different levels. Like he's gross, he's disgusting, he's decrepit, he's like muscly and powerful, and all like he's just all sorts of just terrifying in such a way that is just totally his own, you know.
It's a very unique depiction of the character, and that's I think one of the standout moments of this movie is like they reveal so little of Orlok, a little bit at a time, right? Like when you first see him in the castle, they have him lit in a way where it's like you can
you don't even see his face clearly, I think, until he might be invited in by Lily Rose Depp's character when they're having like a vision or something.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. I love that detail.
I don't know. Let's step back for a minute. Let's just give high level thoughts, right? To just establish where everybody is on this movie. Sorry, I'm fighting my cat right now. He's in my lap.
You're good.
I thought it was like as good as any other Robert Eggers movie that I've seen. Although it is, I think I haven't seen The Northman, but still underneath The Witch for me in terms of just like the purity and the I have a tendency of liking really small scale movies that take place in like very limited characters and a very limited amount of time and a very limited place. I think it's like interesting to watch people do a lot with a little. And so in terms of that, I think The Witch is still it for me, but like I can't point out anything that I don't like about this movie. And there are things like we'll get into some of the performances. Like Willem Dafoe is so fucking good in this movie that you should go see it just to see Willem Dafoe.
Yeah. Man. I'm in pretty big agreement. I would love to do The Northman sometime for the podcast. Because that one I feel like is maybe a little more divisive, but I do feel like if you're a fan of this director, all of his movies are kind of interchangeable with whatever your top, you know, four is of his. And I think that I lost it. I don't know. Come back to me.
Yeah. Neil, how about you?
So yeah, in a weird way, as I was watching this, like I think I definitely need a second viewing to really nail down my exact feelings. But as I was watching it, I almost felt like I was watching a documentary in like in that like this might make more sense with like books, but like I'll pick up like a Warhammer 40K book, and I flip through it and I enjoy it. I had fun. But then later, maybe if I'm feeling spicy, I'll pick up like a like a biography of somebody, and like the book isn't fun. Like I'm not enjoying myself in the same way, but it can be interesting and I'm engaged. And that's kind of how I felt here. Like I'm not sure I was entertained, but I was interested the whole time.
I think I understand what you mean. I mean, like it's hard to be, it's like how people talk about The Last of Us. It's like, did I enjoy myself? Like, not really. That was fucking horrific, but I was thoroughly entertained and interested and compelled is like the right word,
Invested.
right? I was invested, I was compelled by it, right? I think I know what you mean. I had a great experience. Like it was a very, very full theater, and I was there with Grace, and I had popcorn and Milk Duds, right? So I had a great time just as a theater going experience, like watching everybody recoil in horror at all the same scenes and everything. So I can't really relate, but I definitely understand. I feel that way about other movies. Gideon, did you figure out what you wanted to say?
I think I totally lost a bill. I'm sure I'll remember it in a bit, but I can talk about my theater going experience. So I saw it twice. I saw it at the film scene, which was really great. I saw it at film scene in Iowa City at the Chauncey, I think it's called. Which just makes me think of that dog on Mad Men, right? Chauncey or whatever.
R.I.P.
The brightness was awesome, like the theater, everything about the just how it was like built was really, really nice, and the volume was cranked, which was fucking awesome, especially
Mine
for
was
this
loud
movie.
as hell too. Yeah, mine was loud.
And it was a little annoying, like some people, I'm like, God damn it, why are you talking? They're right behind me, just talking, just chit-chatting away. I'm like, motherfuckers, like this is supposed to be like an indie theater, like God, people are just always doing that. But I try and zone it out. I was able to do that most of the movie, and it was pretty loud. It drowned them out. But really like that. And then when I saw it at the Muscatine Theater, don't think I really had any issues with talking. But I swear, some of the theaters, like, it's not loud enough, and it's like dim on the brightness. It's like too low. And especially for this fucking movie, where like you can hardly see anything in some scenes, like you can go a while where you're just like really like squinting to try and get as much detail. But still, both experiences were awesome. And I thought it was the movie, it's like in the same way that Nosferatu has such a presence and like dark power to him, it feels like when it starts, like the movie grabs you by the shirt or the throat or whatever, and doesn't let go for a while. And it's just
It's like the movie
very,
is haunted. No, I understand what you mean. It does have a quality of drawing you into it. And usually I'm not like, I'll have a jump scare or whatever, but I'm usually not like having a genuine conniption in the theater because of what I'm watching. But there were a couple scenes in this movie where I was like, I need to get the fuck out of here right now. I was like not in a good place. Like there are a couple of the like I would call them like the exorcism scenes where she's just out of her mind, right? It's like Grace
Incredible.
when she like when she switched her birth control. Those scenes were like it's so creepy and disturbing. I was like, oh my God, I just need her to stop doing what she's doing, and I'm just gonna eat my popcorn and ignore it.
Well, even how the movie like opened with one of those, basically, like really intense.
Yeah, she did a great. I mean, she did a great job, and it's a shame that horror movies are never direct, or are never nominated for Academy Awards because she deserves one.
Go ahead, Neil.
Yeah, I was gonna say I felt like Lily Rose Depp. There were a few parts where I found her like general acting a little meh, but as far as just like going all out, especially on the physical aspects of the role, like I don't want to take a single thing away from her. She gave it 110%, and like this is like her second major film role. Mm-hmm. Like she's mostly just been in like
she's been in the Idol. That's a show, but
oh, but like yeah, it's like maybe a couple shows and like Chanel commercials, basically. Mm-hmm. So
Robert Eggers definitely has a thing for these wide-eyed, attractive females. You know, Anya Taylor-Joy basically launched his, he launched her career, they mm-hmm. launched each other's career, but Lily Rose Depp and Anya Taylor-Joy were, you know, it's like how Guillermo del Toro always casts, like, wispy brunettes, you know, like pale, gothy, not gothy, but kind of like elfy brunette women in his movies. Robert Eggers definitely has a thing for this type of woman in his lead roles. Mm-hmm. She was very good, but the star of the show, I couldn't wait until he got into the movie about, you know, maybe 40% of the way through. Willem Dafoe is so freaking good in this movie. I just was smiling every time he was on screen.
Oh, he's so good. Yeah, he's a treat in like any movie. He's like similar to, I think I mentioned in our Lost episode of what was that Lynch movie you watched?
Wild at Heart.
That's right. Like him and Nick Cage, I feel like bring a similar energy and enthusiasm to whatever character, and they're just so electric and fun on screen. But mm-hmm. then when you get them in a really great movie like this, it's like it's just amplified, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, they're, you know, directors have to know how to use them correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But you got some Culver's there. Getting?
Oh yeah, dude, it was fire.
All right, well, fuck this movie. What'd you get from Culver's?
I was telling Neil like right before you joined, but I got a double, like a bacon deluxe, mm-hmm. and with everything on it, and then I got pretzel bites and some Coke.
Oh, nice.
Did pretzel bites?
Yeah. Define everything on it.
Onions, pickles, ketchup, mustard. I guess I don't get tomato. I take tomato. I think lettuce is on there too. Yeah.
Okay. Bacon. Interesting. Yeah. All right. Just checking. It's because this brings up like the everything everywhere all at once. It's like a burger with everything on it.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. Back to Nosferatu. Willem Dafoe, fucking awesome in this movie. Has all the best lines in the movie.
The crowing of the cock, right?
Mm. I've seen things that would make Isaac Newton crawl back into his mother's womb.
See, okay, I'm gonna say that Simon McBurney as Mr. Knock, he had some pretty good bits in there as well. I was to be king of the rats.
Oh yeah, he was wild, dude.
Neil,
the guy eating the bird, right?
Sorry, I couldn't understand you both at the same time.
Sorry, was he the guy eating the bird, right?
Yep.
Okay, yep. He was fucking crazy.
Go Neil, ahead. Who was the character that had the line? I mean, it's not much of a line, it's just one word. Where he's like, Swiss! Questioning.
Frederick. The rich boat owner.
Right, okay. That... I when I heard that line, I was like, Neil's gonna laugh out loud at that line, and the delivery. There was just something about that was so funny. Like that got a bunch of were people laughing inappropriately in your guys' theater?
I was the guy laughing inappropriately.
Like at what?
To spoil the ending, when they finally defeat Dracula and he's like laying in the bed and you see his little like stick legs. Just cracked up.
Oh my god, yeah.
It's like dude skipped leg day at the gym.
Fucking mm-hmm. every day. Dude never walked.
Yeah. But I just want to throw in I had the same I knew Willem Dafoe was in the movie, so I was just like, okay, when's he gonna get here? Because I knew he was gonna be good. I had the same reaction you did for Ralph Ineson showing up. I was like, mm-hmm. oh yes, like I fist pumped mm-hmm. in the theater. he's becoming one of my favorite working actors. Like
he's great.
I haven't watched enough of his stuff, but everything that I've ever seen, everything that he's been in that I've seen, I've enjoyed. Like, he was great in Chernobyl. He was great in The Witch. He was great in The Green Knight. He has, like, a small role in Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Yeah. I just love his voice.
He's in Final Fantasy 16. He's, like, a primary character in Final Fantasy 16. So that's reason enough to give it a whirl, Gideon.
He's awesome, dude. He has, like, one of the most iconic voices for me. Like,
oh, dude, legendary.
Instantly recognizable.
The scene that disturbed me the most in this movie was when they were on the boat and everybody was getting the plague and throwing up everywhere. I could not handle this shit. Something about a demonic plague infecting a boat where you cannot escape. I was just like, I can't handle this right now.
Well, so that actually brought up another thought that I had during the movie is that I think it might have come out during COVID. Another movie that I meant to see that I just haven't is, I think it's Last Voyage of the Demeter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Liam Cunningham.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is about the ship on its way from Transylvania to, in the story, England, with Dracula aboard.
I see.
Hell yeah.
So
see, that's interesting.
When we get to spooky season, we'll have to make Sam watch it.
Yeah, there's something...
It was fun from what I watched. You know, if you're into vampires and shit, it's definitely fun. Worth it, I'd say.
Neil, that was my impression as well. I was telling Gideon about this last night, where I saw some behind the scene footage where Lily Rose Depp was doing her audition via Zoom because they would have been auditioning for it during COVID, which made me think, did Robert Eggers make this movie because it was COVID times and there was like a literal plague on the earth, and he got to thinking about like what would a modern remake of Nosferatu be like? I mean, that's kind of like.
Yeah, I mean, so, I've got like three main lines of thought. Number one is that it feels wrong to talk about this movie with just three guys here. I messaged Laura last night and asked her, if I send you the money for a ticket, will you go to a matinee so that you can show up to this episode? And unfortunately, she's dog sitting, so she couldn't make it. Mm. But I wish she or Amari were here, because I don't want to call this a feminist movie, but it's definitely like, I think part of the reason that I didn't, air quotes, enjoy it is that I think in a lot of ways, this is a movie meant for women.
I agree.
Number one, all the girls at my work are really into this series. I think I don't know if it's like the series title or if it's the first book, called A Court of Thorns and Roses.
Oh, Grace is into that too.
All the girls at my work are into monster fucking, and this is a monster fucker movie.
Mm-hmm.
Capital letters.
Which, maybe I'm not moving in the right circles, I've seen some stuff on the internet, but I feel like monster fucking is more of a female genre these days.
It always has been.
Yeah, and like, you know, I don't want to dominate this conversation, but you know, like, there's the, I think that there's like, you know, parallels with like Beauty and the Beast here. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you know, it's, you know, I think there's also elements as far as like this being for like the female gaze of yaoi, like boys' love, where, mm-hmm. you know, the Orlok's first victim is Nicholas Hoult's character, forgetting his name. Thomas
Sutter. Yep.
Yeah, you know, he's getting chomped on, and it's like made to be sort of like psychosexual, which has always been like a theme of vampire movies, is the psychosexual aspect. But like,
right,
you know, he's getting dommed by the big monster, you know, and Lily Rose Depp's character Ellen, who's like psychic is like, oh, I think, kind of aware that it's happening. Like, you know, she's the viewer.
No, I think there's absolutely something to what you're saying, because my, I didn't want to give too much of it away earlier because I didn't want to like, I didn't want to like get consensus by influencing like where the conversation went necessarily. But to me, the whole, every horror movie has its like, this is what's supposed to be scary on the surface. And this is like the realistic thing that's actually scary about this movie. So like a good example would be in Alien, like we're not so far in human history need to be afraid of xenomorphs, right? That's not like a real thing. So the movie is like this fantasy about being afraid of aliens, but the real horror of Alien is that men are afraid of women's ability to get pregnant, and men are afraid of becoming pregnant themselves, right? Like that is like what's actually scary about Alien, right? Is like all this psychosexual stuff that's like underneath the, it's like in the subtext of the movie. Similarly, I think the core of the Dracula mythos and the core of the Dracula story is like German traditional European white men afraid of like Slavic men coming over and stealing their women. And their women like willingly wanting to be with these like foreign men that are like moving into their country. I think like that's probably where the core anxiety of the movie is, right? Because like you said, the sexual element has been with the Dracula story since the very, very beginning. And it's like so central. And vampires are more than any other movie monster just hypersexualized in our society. And I think that element's been there from like the very beginning. Just my take.
Yeah, no.
There's something sexy about Orlok. I'm just gonna go ahead and say it. I'm just throwing it out there. He's got a great voice,
dude.
Yeah, no, okay. Like,
yeah, he's
dude.
Rewind, like Bill Skarsgård. Between this and it,
Pennywise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like dude's going all out on like heavy makeup. Like, I think I saw somewhere that he like hired an opera coach to like teach him how to lower his voice a whole octave for the role. You know,
incredible.
Yeah, like great performance there as well. Like, yeah, I have to give him the shout out. But here's kind of the thing where I was not necessarily struggling, but like where I was like trying to pay attention like it was a documentary. Mm-hmm. Is that in the original book and in the 92 adaptation, like Dracula is a person, like not that he's a human before, but he has like a history. He has his own motivations. He winds up fixated on the character of Mina Harker, who is Ellen Hutter here. Like, you know, every character in this movie is a character in Dracula, and they have like a name change. And I wonder, part of me wondered like how much of it is deliberate and how much of it is like they don't want to have to like pay for like the right to use Dracula. Like I'll bring this up later with the setting, but like, so Mina Harker, Ellen Hutter, Dracula winds up fixated on Mina in the book and in the next movie, and in the 92 movie it's weirder and I have problems with it. But like he is his own character who has his own motivations and desires and like has his own agency.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in this, like particularly with the element of the plague later, and the way that he's introduced, it's almost like she summoned him into being. Like he doesn't have much of a, he doesn't have like a backstory in this movie. He just kind of appears, and mm-hmm. he's intertwined with her character to such like he like seduced her when she was 16, but she was also reaching out to him. Like they're like interconnected, and to me, he's not a person. Like we call him Orlok. But like his whole obsession is to have her give in to him, which again, this like weird psychosexual way with the monster fucking is like her like acknowledging that, yes, I'm attracted to this monster. And so with the plague element, it, to me, it's like he's not a character. He is a force. He's like an elemental being that doesn't like have
temptation.
He doesn't have like free will of his own. He is. And I settled on desire, which doesn't feel exactly right, but it was the closest word I could find.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, he's like lust incarnate.
And again, it's not even I thought about lust.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not quite it to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is desire in that, like, Ellen's character, it's not that she wanted a lover. She didn't want to be alone. And so she found, like, the darkest version of that, Norlock. And then she found Thomas, who's, like, you know, vanilla milquetoast guy. But, you know, he liked her despite her being weird, and that was enough for her. Like, and that, like, severed the bond for a while.
Yeah.
Like, so it was like, again, desire isn't quite right, but I think it's more than lust. I think it's more than just sexuality. And I'm sorry for
reminds me almost person. Of, no, please. It almost reminds me of Michael Myers, right? In that every time that they try to make him into a character, it just makes him worse. And the most pure interpretation is that he's just like fate coming to get you, and any attempts to like rationalize or give him motivation just makes it stupid. And the beauty of that, like, you know, it's like you always say about Alien, I admire its purity. That's kind of, there's something beautiful about a horror movie villain that is just a pure force of fucking evil, like Orlok, mm-hmm. or the Xenomorph, or Michael Myers, or, you know, something like this.
And again, though, just to like hammer home my point, like, Willem Dafoe, like, even says, like, Orlok is beyond good and evil. He's death itself. Like, I think he's like a primal force. He's not, he's not a person in like the traditional sense.
Mm-hmm. He's like something out of Pandora's box or something. Something that couldn't have been opened. Like, to kind of speak to that, like, just his presence, how ominous and scary and frightening he is. This whole movie feels like it's like Robert Eggers, like, found this dusty old, like, Necronomicon and, like, slams it on the table and reminds people why Nosferatu is one of the most iconic, like, film characters of all time, and why he's like so scary. And I mean, I can't imagine like what people thought when they saw the original back in the day. And this is just such a cool modern retelling of that. And he has so much force and power to him in a way that I feel like I can't really compare it to, you know, not like a Marvel villain or even like, I don't know, something more sinister or scary and like a crime thriller or something like that. Like, he's so totally uniquely horrifying, and there's so many elements of just like how he looks, how his voice sounds, how he acts, like this weird, like psychosexual and like almost like telepathic vision connection that they have.
I think we're all getting at something that is somewhat similar, which is like Robert Eggers is really good to delving into the past and unearthing like these myths and why they resonated with people and why they've resonated with people for centuries and generations, right? It's because there are these like underlying things that are scary to all humans in different centuries and things like that. And the stories that have stuck around, the stories that have been like really important and really captured the zeitgeist, as it were, are the ones that preyed upon those like really, really deeply frightening things to us. And yeah, this is just another example of him picking a great topic and you know, something great coming out of it.
I heard Real quick, I heard his next movie is going to be a remake of Labyrinth. Do you guys hear that?
I saw that he was to write and direct, but I thought his next one was going to be a werewolf thing in the 13th century.
Werewolf would be cool.
Okay, I could be wrong. Yeah, I'm not sure. But that's what I read, but that'd be cool too.
Is there any scenes that you in the movie that you guys didn't like? Any shit that stood out to you as like, yeah, they could have cut that or they could have changed that around a little bit?
I don't know. I've seen people like complain online saying it's like a snooze fest and it's really boring and slow. I don't really know what the hell they're talking about. Like,
no,
there is some talking scenes that are a bit extended, but it's like it's all relevant to the plot and what's going on. And I don't really know what I would cut personally. Like, I feel like all those moments kind of heighten the other more intense moments. Like,
I did feel myself noticing the length of the movie towards the end, but at the same time, I don't know what I would cut.
I mean, I could just go through Rotten Tomatoes and read people who have left half star reviews of Nosferatu, and we could have a decent look on, decent laugh at some of these. No, I won't do that. The one thing, and I'm sure there's a good plot reason for why it happened. I just don't remember why it was. As soon as they show the two little girls that are Frederick's little girls doing the prayer, I was like, those kids are dead. And I don't really remember there being a good reason for those kids dying. And that was, it felt a little cheap to me. I felt like they could have done the same. Not that I'm not offended like by the violence. I'm not offended by like, you kill whoever you want to kill in your movie. Mm. That's fine. Even if it's kids, right? It felt like it was shocking for the sake of being shocking to me. And they could have achieved the same thing with like the wife dying or whatever. Again, I'm not offended. I'm just like, that felt like a let's get people talking about this movie kind of moment.
I would say to counter that, like, I feel like just kind of how we've all talked about our different experiences with the movie, I feel like a lot of this movie is kind of open to interpretation, like, or like even a real like vampire or person or whatever, or is he this like presence or force? Like, even that, like, that could be like maybe that's just the plague killing their children and stuff, you know?
Right.
And the mom was getting like
interesting
because wasn't the mom getting chewed on by the rats too, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
stuff like that.
I did read like a one star review of this movie that was like, this movie is corpse fucking for 2 hours. You know, some people are into that, I suppose.
That's funny.
Pick your poison. So we are coming up, believe it or not, guys, we're coming up on an hour.
Nice.
I know. Where has the time gone? Anything else? Any burning questions? Any burning subjects we want to talk about with Nosferatu before we start wrapping things up?
I want to mention the budget. According to Wikipedia, it says it was $50 million to make this movie, which is crazy.
That seems pretty inexpensive, right?
Yeah, I would think so. This, okay. Well, like this... And Dune 2 was, I think, $180 million, and then Red 1 was $250 million. You know,
Jesus. Like, well, it's Disney budgets.
What the fuck is happening? But because I think the Northman was like $90 million, if I remember right.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think this movie looks like immaculate for
it's great.
How. It's great. Like, I was actually shocked to see it was only $50 million. I would have thought, like, I don't know, $125 million, just based on how the costumes look, the sets, everything. I do want to shout out my favorite shot or scene in the whole movie. Definitely the carriage, when the carriage finally shows up, and it just slowly opens. I'm like, this is a Bloodborne cutscene.
Yeah, that's exactly.
This is a Bloodborne cutscene.
Exactly.
He's going to Kanehurst Castle now.
Yeah, that was exactly what I thought. But they don't you think that has to be from a shared, like, don't you think that the Bloodborne team and Robert Eggers got that idea from the same shared text? Like, there's probably a Dracula book or something that references a carriage that drives itself.
Yeah, well, and even like in the original, there is like that carriage that picks them up the rest of the way, but there's someone driving it. I don't remember if he's like not on it by the end. Go ahead, Neil.
In the book, rather than being opposed to Dracula, the Romani are like his servants. So yeah, there's a Romani coach driver who comes and gets him. Similarly, though, when Nicholas Hoult showed up at the inn, I was like, oh man, this is The Witcher.
Big Witcher vibes.
Extreme
for sure.
Witcher vibes, that whole chunk of the movie.
But that's what I mean, dude. Like, that is like one of the most appealing things to me. It was just the different, like the more historical take on Dracula, like the real Romani and the real like Eastern European vibes of like the snowy castle and everything like this, and going into this like unknown land that is almost on the border of like going into Russia and like this really unknown territory for Europeans and things like that. Just I thought that bit of it was just so freaking good. Well, what else, guys? A few more things.
So going back to complaints, this isn't a cut. But again, I mentioned that, like, you know, they changed everybody's name, but like there is a direct parallel for every one of these characters from the original book or the 1992 movie. But the original setting is mostly in London, and here they set it in a German town.
Yeah.
And again, I did wonder, like, is this just so they don't have to pay like royalty fees to whoever owns Dracula right now?
In the original 1922 movie, they're in a town called Visburg, which I
okay. Think... I think that's what they called it here. Okay, so there's probably okay. Maybe it's a mesh, but what I did want to say though was that to reference another thing that Ralph Ineson was in, you guys both saw Chernobyl, right?
Mm-hmm. I've seen like two episodes of it, but yeah.
Okay, so it was a British production, and you know, even though it's set in Soviet Russia or Soviet Ukraine, all the actors speak with British accents, you know, whichever like regional dialects aside, but you know, it's an English production or a British production. And they did that consciously, where they like, rather than like, you know, like I'm sure Willem Dafoe could have, or like Willem Dafoe does like a German accent and he does a fine job.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy who plays Frederick, I think, was probably like the weakest actor of the bunch. And I don't know what his nationality is, but he was speaking with an English accent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure Nicholas Hoult is American, but he was kind of doing an English accent. Lily Rose Depp was doing like an English accent, and it was like, okay, so are we in Germany, or are we I would have preferred the Chernobyl approach, where it's just like either everybody does. Either set it in England so everybody can just speak English and we don't have to, and then Willem Dafoe's character, who's Van Helsing, he's the foreign madman, like he can have an accent and be weird. Mm-hmm. Or like it was just kind of jarring, like, okay, so he's like he's Swiss, but okay, but like that's still kind of German in its own way. I just wish there was like, okay, like we're in Germany, but everybody else has English accents. Like, pick one.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a little muddled to me. That's
okay.
All.
Okay.
You know, I wouldn't have thought about that, Neil, but I'm glad you brought it up. That's an interesting observation.
Yeah, and for me, I feel like a lot of the lines are kind of blurred because, like, I am not as familiar with a lot of the actual Dracula stuff or, like, the Dracula movie that Neil's been referencing. And I know, like, Nosferatu is just, like, mostly a straight-up ripoff. And that's why, like, back in the day, it was ordered to be destroyed, like, court-ordered. And we only have it because, like, a library in France had it. And somewhere else in, I think, Germany, like just a few random copies. But yeah, like there's just so much to draw from the original movie, all the different Dracula ones, the book. It can get a bit confusing, I guess, with all the different contexts coming from so many different angles.
You guys ready to give it a score and wrap this up?
I think so.
Yeah.
All right. I'll go first. I'm gonna give it a 4, not because I think there's anything wrong with it, but just because I feel like, a 5 has got to be reserved for those special sometimes. I had a great time with this. It's a very specific recommendation, but a strong one. If you can handle it, I'd say go for it. Right on par with Eggers' other work. I think he's like one of the most consistent directors working today. He's got a really interesting slant to him. And what I mean by that is like a Denis Villeneuve and a Christopher Nolan to me are very similar filmmakers. Like they're interested in the craft and like how big can we make this? Let's shoot it on IMAX. Let's all the technical stuff, right? And I can't think of another director that I really think is that similar to Eggers, and that he's so ensconced in like the historical research. And there's something unique about that, and I just think he's great. So yeah, I'll give it a 4, a strong 4, and loved it.
You can go next, Neil.
Okay. I'm going to give this one a 3. That might change on a review. I think there's a lot to like about this movie. But just sort of comparing it, like in my mind, comparing it to some other films that I gave a 4 to, I just wasn't quite there for me. Like I said, I found it more interesting than entertaining. And again, some of these thoughts might change on a review. Like definitely a very strong 3. I think most people should see it. I definitely had a good time. It's just kind of, again, it's just kind of saving that room for like the 4s and 5s. It's just not quite a 4 for me.
That's fair.
I'm getting, yeah, man.
For me, I mean, it's pretty obvious. I mean, I love this director. This is a easy 5 for me. I walked in definitely expecting that, and I wasn't let down. I think this is the best horror movie of the last year, and easily top 3 best movies of last year, for me. I think it's really incredible, and it just makes me want to check out more things Dracula, get more history and context of not just Dracula, but Nosferatu, and the different remakes over the years and stuff like that. So just really enjoy it. I love a good period piece. I love some good gothic horror, and this has it in spades. I think everybody's performances were incredible. The vibe is insane. I can't wait to watch this on 4K Blu-ray on the OLED. It's gonna be crazy. And with subtitles, that'll be nice so I can understand a bit better what's happening.
It's comfort of your own home, man. You can have subtitles and your dick out if you want. Dick's out for Orlok. Am I right?
Speaking of that, did you hear that Nicholas Holt has like he framed the prosthetic penis and it has that as like in his collection or whatever in his house?
So f f fun funny 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 I had heard that. And because like I didn't look too deeply into this movie before going into it, but I knew that Willem Dafoe was in it. I initially thought that Willem Dafoe was Orlok.
Hanging
And I thought
out.
that they were and I thought that they, yeah, and I thought they were doing another Last Temptation of
Antichrist.
Christ or yeah, an Antichrist thing where Robert Eggers decided that it would shock audiences and confuse them too much.
God bless Willem Dafoe. Well,
For real. Yeah,
boys,
Sam, I think God did bless God or God did bless Willem Dafoe.
clearly. Well, boys, next week, I guess we're going to do the Green Knight after a long, drawn out delay to get there, but I'm happy to finally be doing that. So what do you say we wrap this up and then we get hit Red Ridge and kill some orcs?
Let's do it.
All right,
Sure.
boys. See you later, guys.
Have a good one.